From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last month, and look, I don't mean to throw shade or drink the haterade or give the side eye to the makers of the Oxford Dictionary and Merriam-Webster, but listen, the dictionaries added more than 1,000 new words and terms and phrases. If you ask me, they are trying too hard. They produced a rather craptacular list, almost like someone drunk texted an editor and the editor decided it was a good idea. Squad goals, y'all. Yeah, facepalm, right? The whole thing seems like a train wreck to me. Or maybe you think I'm humble bragging, or I'm a word truther, or this whole complaining is weak sauce. Maybe you're thinking, yowza, calm down, Evan. You're just jelly. You're part of the herd mentality. Adding new words to the dictionary can be useful. Well, I don't know. Do we really need ghosted? I understand adding microaggression, or microbiome, or otherwise, but sausage party, really? And Merriam-Webster, it is 2017, not 1987. Maybe a little late to be adding Kodak moment. You might have picked up on the fact that this intro was littered with newly added words. Throw shade, haterade, craptacular, drunk text, squad goals, facepalm, train wreck, yowza, truther, herd mentality. Can you define these terms? We have a quiz coming up. We'll also take the opportunity to discuss how language changes over time. And that is a favorite subject for me. Let me go and welcome our guests for the hour. Chris Fanning is the Director of Communications for Writers and Books. Nice to have you back here, Chris.
I'm excited to be here today.
Lou Highsmith is Program Director of Lou Creations Production and leader of the Rock Bottom Slam Poetry Team. Lou, welcome to you.
Hello, Evan.
Also here is Maya Abtakian, Assistant Professor of Linguistics at the University of Rochester. Maya, welcome to you.
Hi, thank you.
And Dan Mulcahy is Creative Director for Bush Communications. Dan, welcome to you.
Hi, Evan.
All right, Dan, I'll start with you and we'll go around the table here. Some of those terms that I read off the list there, should they be in the dictionary?
You bet. Maybe just not the regular dictionary. Maybe there's quite a few sites that do slam or slang stuff. Maybe that's the place for some of them.
Like Urban Dictionary?
Like an Urban Dictionary, yeah. Like
but MW.com, Oxford Dictionary, even online, should they be in there?
There's a few there that aren't going to stand the test of time. The I do like haterade, though. I do like don't drink the haterade. So some of them, I guess, it's personal, and you know, it's kind of like what you like, what you don't like.
Okay, Lou, what do you think?
There were maybe a couple that you mentioned, train wreck, that's been around probably
pretty commonly used. Yeah.
That makes sense, but some things I feel are faddish, and they'll play out after a while, and I just don't feel they should actually be in a reputable dictionary.
Okay, Maya.
Well, I mean, I think there's a sense that dictionaries somehow give us the authority on language. But as far as I'm concerned, there's no reason for them not to be in the dictionary, that dictionaries should reflect what we actually say.
Oh, that hurts a little. That's good to disagree a little bit. Chris Fanning, what do you think?
I have the Urban Dictionary app on my phone that I go to probably before I even go to the internet and look up a word on the OED or something. So I support it. I mean, especially if everything's online, we can get to it fast and it's not being reprinted over and over again. I'm for them.
Yeah. Kyle Semmel from Writers and Books sent me via Twitter a very interesting article. Yeah.
That guy.
He sent me an article via The Economist that is very interesting on the history of language. And this actually makes me more worried about this decision because this is from The Economist. Quote, biologists reckon that most species that have ever existed on this planet are now extinct. That is true of words, too. Of the Oxford English Dictionary's 231,000 entries, at least a fifth are now obsolete, end quote. So if a fifth of the 231,000 are already obsolete, why are we entering terms that could be obsolete within a decade or two? Doesn't that seem like we... But Maya, you think, you know, if people are using them now, should they have more staying power? I mean, Lou pointed out train wreck. That may have a little more staying power than yowza, you know, craptacular. I don't know. I mean, how do you feel about that?
Well, part of this is also documenting the language as it's spoken today, right? This means that 100 years from now, even if those words aren't used, somebody can look up how they were used and they can see how it might have changed.
Okay, well, let's take the quiz then. And here's the deal. Producer Megan Mack put this quiz together based on these terms. We're going to see how our contestants in studio do. If you are playing along on Twitter, good luck. There are no prizes. But just my everlasting admiration if you beat Chris Fanning.
Wow.
So here we go. And I guess I'll start with a different person each time on how they're going to answer. All right. So question number one. And these are fill in the blanks, but I'm going to give you three choices.
Okay.
Last month when I was dating Pat, I told my friends how well it was going, but they thought I was A, geeking out, B, humble bragging, C, smishing. Okay, Chris Fanning.
I'm going to go with humble bragging.
Okay, Dan?
Well, I know smishing has to do with relationship with people who don't actually exist. So it's probably humble bragging. Yeah.
Okay, Lou?
Same, humble bragging.
Maya?
I guess humble bragging.
Would you have guessed that right without the help?
I was going
to
start with smishing.
So
I ruined you should, that. Sorry.
So humble bragging is correct. But by the way, all three possible answers to each question are entries, new entries to either Oxford or Merriam-Webster.
Okay.
So I'm because this quiz tells a little story, I will now include the answer and then go to the next one. So last month when I was dating Pat, I told my friends how well it was going. They thought I was humble bragging. Well, it's because they were A. B-O-K-E-H. B, jelly. C, food insecure. Okay, Lou.
Definitely jelly.
Okay, Maya?
Jelly.
Chris?
Jelly, because I don't know what the first word was.
I don't either. Dan?
I'm going to go food insecure.
B, jelly is correct. And again, does anybody know how to pronounce B-O-K-E-H?
Boca? Yeah, I don't know.
Megan Mack's going to tell me what that means. She'll figure it out. But that is one of the new entries. See? What are we doing here? All right, so next one. So I'll continue the story. It's because they were jelly, which, by the way, means jealous. It's because they were jelly. Well, too bad for them. They're upset because they're all A, listicles, B, truthers, C, cat ladies. Lou?
I'll go with cat ladies.
Okay, Maya.
I'm going to agree with Lou.
All right.
Absolutely cat ladies.
Dan?
Yeah, definitely.
It is cat ladies. So too bad for them. They're upset because they're all cat ladies. Little did I know, though, Pat would end up blanking me. So here we go. Ghosting, B, screencasting, and C, freecycling me. So ghosting me, screencasting me, freecycling me. Maya?
I have no idea. I'm going to go with screencasting.
Screencasting me.
Ghosting.
Ghosting. Dan?
Freecycling, getting rid of.
Okay.
You know?
Ghosting.
Lou and Chris are correct. Ghosting is correct. And Chris, since you knew right away, what does ghosting mean in this context?
It's ducking out. It's leaving. It's Irish goodbying.
Irish goodbying. Yeah, there you go. That's actually what I thought. Irish goodbye. All right. So the quiz continues with a new story. There's three different stories. We got a few more to go here. So here we go. When I called my mom to tell her I got a promotion, she said, A, botnet. B, yas. C, woo-woo. Chris Fanning.
Yes.
All right, Dan.
Yes.
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 Yeah, I guess I pronounced it again.
Yes.
Yes. That's correct. Woo-woo, by the way, some people might go with, but that actually means like spiritually, like weird bunk spirituality.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Woo-woo.
You know, a lot of people, I'm not going to say what I was going to think there. Okay. Editing myself is smart. I haven't edited myself all week. I just did it for the first time. Good for me. All right. When I called my mom to tell her I got a promotion, she said, yes. When my coworkers found out, they, A, upfaked, B, drunk texted, C, threw shade. Dan.
Threw shade.
All right.
Threw shade.
Threw shade.
Yeah. I think so.
All right. Shade is correct there. When my coworkers found out, they threw shade. Whatever. My real friends won't. A, walk back. B, drink the Haterade. C, facepalm. Lou?
As much as I hate this term, drink the Haterade.
Yeah, see, you and Dan are going to fight. I love it. Maya?
Drink the Haterade.
Drink the Haterade.
Same.
All right, Dan?
Yeah, my sister would use that all the time.
See,
yeah.
But you said you're kind of fine with that in the dick. Drink the Haterade.
It's perfect.
It feels like it's going to last for like 6 weeks.
Well, what time is it now? Yeah, exactly.
All right, our final story quiz with the quiz starts with this. My friends and I went on a road trip. I sat in the A, microbiome. Wouldn't want to sit there. Ooh. B, way back. C, town hall. Maya.
Way back.
Way back.
Way back.
Dan?
The town hall.
Okay.
I'll say way back.
Way back is correct. I don't know why way back is now one word together and it has to be a word because way, you know, back can be a noun modified by way, but apparently we've got to combine it according to the dictionaries. So my friends and I went on a road trip. I sat in the way back. Our trip was mad hella A, ping, B, Fitzbo, C, weak sauce. Lou.
Okay, I don't really use any of these terms.
Ping, Fitzbo, or weak sauce?
All right, I'll go ping.
Ping.
The trip?
The trip was mad
can you
hella.
Read it again?
Yeah. Our trip was mad hella. Ping, Fitzbo, or weak sauce? Weak sauce.
I'll go with weak sauce.
Okay.
I don't know if it's positive or negative. If it's negative, it's weak sauce. So I'll go with weak sauce.
Yeah. If it's bad, it's weak sauce. Yeah.
It is weak sauce. I don't know what ping or fitbo mean, by the way, but they're in the dictionary now. Congratulations, world. You got those terms to work with. So our trip was mad hella weak sauce. In the Grand Canyon, a donkey blanked us. A, photobombed. B, binge-watched. C, untagged. Maya.
While it would be really funny if a donkey binge-watched them, yes. I think it was probably photobombed.
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 Yeah, photobombed. Yeah.
Photobombed.
Correct. Photobombed. In the Grand Canyon, a donkey photobombed us. It was a blank. First world problem, train wreck, or Kodak moment?
Wow. I think it could be most of those. I'll go with Kodak moment, though.
Train wreck.
Kodak moment.
I'll go with train wreck.
That was a trick question. All three were usable in that. And Chris Fanning even picked up on that. He scored 100%, didn't he, Megan? I don't think Chris got anything wrong. Guess what? Nobody's going to win the prize because you can't beat Chris Fanning. He's unbeatable.
I'm going to have my tire slashed when I go outside.
So thank you, Megan Mack, for telling us that the term that I didn't know, hold on, misspelled. B-O-K-E-H, and it's pronounced bokeh. It means the blurred quality or effect seen in the out-of-focus portion of a photograph taken with a narrow depth of field.
Oh, my God.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Did y'all learn something new there?
I did.
So all of these terms are in the dictionary, and what I did was I called my father, who is kind of a language addict. He loves, you know, learning about language and kind of analyzing how we use it and whether we're using it correctly. He sends me stuff just about every day. So I said, Dad, we got all these new terms in the dictionary. If we were doing this when you were growing up, what were the terms, what would they have been? Because they weren't doing the silly exercise in the 1960s. But if they were, he gave us five terms, and we're going to see now if our guests can get it. But we got to start with Chris because you're the youngest. Okay. So the first term that my father's era used was no soap. What does no soap mean, Chris?
I think that's an unfortunate turn of events when you smell for a couple days, probably.
No you're soap.
No snowing.
Okay. Dan?
Baloney. Kind of a straight shooting.
Okay. Mm. Lou?
No soap. Being real, genuine.
Okay. Maya, no soap.
Yep, telling the truth.
Neither one of you. Correct there. No soap was a saying similar to no dice, nothing doing, not happening.
Oh.
So he'd say, you know, we really wanted to stop off at Nick Tahoe's, but no soap, didn't have time. Next term, one-armed bandit. Chris Fanning, what's a one-armed bandit?
Probably somebody who's like a maverick, sneaky, can get the job done.
Maybe, but not in this case. Dan?
It's the machine in Las Vegas where you put the quarters in.
Okay, Lou?
Yes, the machine, gambling machine.
Yeah, the slot machine.
Slot machine is correct. Chris is 0 for 2, by the way. I don't know if we're doing this part of it online. We should, because then we finally have Chris losing. All right, so this,
wow!
The next term from about 50 years ago that would have been in the dictionary if Merriam-Webster and Oxford were doing this is a verb, rack, or hit the rack. Chris?
Is that like in pool, you rack up the balls?
Nope. Lou?
Rack. Take in?
Okay, Maya?
Seems like some kind of torture. I'm not sure.
Okay.
No, it's hit the hay. It's the bed.
Correct. Yeah. Go to sleep.
Wow.
I had a journal from my father traveling around Europe saying, would have loved to stay up later, but had to rack or hit the rack, hit that every night. And
never.
I said, finally, nope. I said, I assume you mean sleep there. Yes. Next term, beat feet. To beat feet.
Pounding pavement. You're running around.
Okay. Close. Dan.
It's a Michael Jackson term, beat, feet. It's moving your feet quickly.
Okay, Lou?
Run around.
Hurry up.
It's to leave quickly. Like, you know, we are at the party, we sense trouble, we had to beat feet.
Okay.
So all of you are close, but it's usually meant to leave in a quick fashion. Finally, the euphemism is ducktail, but the term is DA. Initials, D-A, duct or ducktail as a euphemism. Chris?
I would say, yeah, to get out of there, to leave, you ducktail.
It's a noun.
Oh.
So I'll help you with this.
Oh. Like a bad hairstyle, like a colic.
Okay, Maya?
I was going to go with hair, too. I don't know.
Lou.
I'll go with clothes.
Okay.
No, it's that part in the back of your head where the hair comes down into that kind of slick ducks When the duck puts his feathers together, it's right back there.
Did you want to explain what DA stands for?
Duck's ass.
Duck's ass, that's right.
Okay.
Dan, by the way, dominated this round.
Wow. It's a demographic thing.
Very good. Oh, man. Okay. Thanks to people for playing on Twitter, by the way. Steven, Arye, Patty, Morgan, and Jin. And Jin says, and you've all made me feel so very old. Thanks, bye. So those are our two quizzes, the modern version, and then if there were a 50s and 60s version of the dictionary taking new words. But you see how, you know, 50 years later, so Chris Fanning as the youngest one on the panel here, you didn't do very well in that. And if those were in the dictionary, wouldn't that seem silly? Wouldn't that seem anachronistic now?
I think I would say that, but then I was reading some article. It might have actually been The Economist one where it was talking about describing a downpour. You say downpour for heavy rain, but why not say frog strangler, which is what they used to call it.
What?
Frog strangler. It's a real frog strangler out there. It's raining so much.
It's raining cats and dogs.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, they're just these things that, you know, are relevant at one time and then they roll out. So I'm not shocked I didn't know a lot of those, but I guess people aren't using them anymore.
Okay, so Dan, does the 50s versus today, does that change your view at all of whether we should be adding words to the dictionary?
No, we should be adding words to the dictionary. You know, it's and I think it's you know, when you look at the list of some of the new additions, you almost are inspired to try a few yourself, you know, and see, like if you started them today on the radio, if you came back in a year, would anybody be saying them, you know? That would be fun to do, don't you think?
Well, maybe. What do you think, Lou?
I suppose if you have that opportunity to take them out of the dictionary, then okay, it makes sense.
So you're saying add them for as long as they're useful and then be willing to excise them.
Remove them.
Okay, all right, Maya.
I say keep them in there. It's the internet. We don't have to print out the new dictionary, right? So I think that they're a good reflection of language as it changes. It's always changing.
Okay, can I add a vote for something? If we're going to do that, and we're adding new terms, can we put a year added demarcation right there?
Oh, I would love that.
Oh, I mean, I think the best model is the OED's model of listing examples, the year that it came in, the year of the example. I'd love to see that in every dictionary.
All right, that's cool. All right, so maybe I've softened a little. Maybe Maya's convinced me. Jimmy in Rochester has a complaint about the whole process, though. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Hi, Evan. How are you? I'm a big fan of your show.
Oh, thanks.
And I am actually Lou's husband, Lee Highsmith. My problem is that a lot of these words are regional colloquiums. Example, like New York City, they call soda, we call it pop, or Texas calls soda water. So how do you address that issue with these colloquiums being regional? That's my question.
That's a great point. And in some places, they call a soda a Coke. Like, you know, I just want to pick a Coke. Doesn't necessarily mean a Coke. It means a generalized soda. So, Lou, your husband made, I don't know if you've ever admitted this, but Jimmy just made a good point.
He did this time.
Sorry,
time he
Jim.
Did.
Do you think, you know, beyond just that one example, there's probably a lot of examples, though, aren't there, about how we speak regionally and whether a term in the Northeast would apply to people in the South versus the Southwest versus Pacific Northwest?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Even within New York State, if you go to New York City, there are certain terminologies that they use that we don't use in Rochester, so that's absolutely true.
So, Maya, if you're in charge then of updating the dictionary, do you need to sort of identify words or phrases that are more universal as opposed to more regional?
I don't know that you need to identify it, but I think including regional variation is appropriate for a dictionary as well. We do have other ways to document this. We have dialect atlases, but I think having it in the dictionary is still appropriate. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's lots of words like that. I mean, what do you call a long roll with cold cuts on it?
Oh, yeah, a sub, a hero.
Hero, yeah.
Hobie. Mm-hmm.
A hobie.
A grinder, yeah.
A grinder, I forgot it. No. Yep. I haven't heard the term grinder since I was at Ohio University, but there was there's some really good grinders in Appalachian, Southeast Ohio. Oh, yeah. So, but that's funny. Okay. Dan, what do you think?
What was the question again?
Are new terms often so regional that adding them would be confusing to people if you put them in the dictionary?
Well, I think all these words go to a tribe. I was asking Alfonso there, the 15-year-old, before we came on, how many of these do you know and how do you use them? And, and he used them in his group quite a bit, you know, certain ones like squad goals. Squad goals, yeah. That's I think a lot of these words are appropriate for different demographics and different groups. So that's very cool.
I look at Lou and Jimmy's marriage, and I think that's squad goals, you know?
Yes.
You know what I mean, Dan?
No, not yet.
Indeed.
Lou, explain to Dan how I just used squad goals. Because that was a pretty good use of it, wasn't it?
Right, absolutely, absolutely. Very good, Evan. Squad goals, primarily if you have your squad or group of people that are close to you and close-knit, you want to be able to achieve what they have when you see that, and that's something that you want to aspire to.
I see. Very good.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm a big Cleveland Cavaliers fan, but, you know, for a while the chemistry on the team wasn't very good, so I would look at, you know, I'd be like, look at Boston's big three. Cavs, that should be squad goals, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, you think about something to aspire to, sometimes in relationship form, but not always. So, Chris, regional, is that a concern for you?
No, I'm very interested in this dialect atlas. Where? How? Library? Where do I find this? Online?
Yeah, so while the older ones are all in the library, there's the Atlas of North American English, which came out in 2006. And that is available almost all online. So you can look at the maps of where people say Coke and soda and pop. And there's actually a really nice line that goes just about between Rochester and Buffalo for soda and pop.
Soda and pop?
Yeah, no way.
Wait, what do we say in Rochester? I actually don't even know.
Well, what do you say in Rochester? I moved here recently.
So did I. I mean, I'm from Cleveland originally, so I was west of the line, the soda pop line.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So what do we say in Rochester?
I think most definitely say pop, but growing up, I always said soda just because my family.
Cuba. Okay.
Yeah.
My family's from the South.
Pop also means having a beer. You want a few pops? We get a few pops.
Yep.
So it's not precise enough anymore. I think we got to improve that.
All right. Let me grab Ingrid, who's been waiting to join the conversation. Go ahead, Ingrid.
Yeah, I wanted to tell you I love this show so much that even though I'm wasting my precious cell phone charge because I have no power, I just wanted
I'm so sorry.
Opening monologue and that quiz were so awesome, Sauce, that it's really wonderful to hear you having so much fun on this day without power. And I wanted to say that I would have thought, and I'm really dying to find this out, that there was one word. I thought this was going to be a quiz question. I thought there was one word that did not fit in your list in the opening monologue, Evan.
No.
I thought that there was one word that was a legit science word.
Oh, boy. Well,
no?
I mean, microbiome,
microbiome,
maybe? Well, microbiome is a word that was added by one of the two dictionaries this year, but that is certainly a word that has scientific currency, yes.
Hmm. Yeah, that's the true word used by real scientists, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yes.
I use it a lot.
Absolutely, yes, is the answer, yes.
Okay, so it's not really in the same category as, like, bokeh or whatever it was.
Yeah, and Haterade, no. I mean, microbiome is definitely a term that is respected and discussed in the nutrition and scientific category. But that also happens. I mean, sometimes science and biology discovers new things or new ways of talking about something. So that doesn't mean it's unrealistic.
Yeah, it's definitely trending. And I just wanted to say that I am older than you'd think to love these words and the fact that they're going into the dictionary, but I do. And as soon as I figure out most of them, then we're on to new words and I have to start all over. So thanks for this great show.
Ingrid, thank you. That makes me feel pretty good. no, I mean, thank you for wasting the rest of your cell phone charge in a region without power just to hang on connections on a Friday. That means that we're having a little bit of fun. We should take our only break of the hour. John Andrus, just occurred to me, I didn't record a tease for Monday, so I can do it live if you don't mind. You know, we're squad goals. Record more teases that are appropriate. How about that? Okay? Otherwise, there we go. See, I can tease what's coming up on Monday, which is teaching the teachers. There's an upcoming conference about teaching high school teachers and helping our teachers teach history, understand African-American history, Native American history. And we'll tell you all about the effort to teach teachers and who is coming in to do that. So that's a part of our conversation coming up on Monday on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our conversation is sparked by the fact that the dictionaries are adding new terms, and a lot of new terms. Merriam-Webster added about 1,000 new words and phrases a month ago, and the Oxford Dictionary added about 300. And some of them are terms like humble brag, facepalm, Seussian, which is of or relating to or suggesting of the works of Dr. Seuss. lots of different things like snollygoster, which is a shrewd, unprincipled person. Again, I don't know. But some of them are very serious. You know, as we said, microaggression, safe space, microbiome, EpiPen. Those are terms that obviously, you know, wouldn't have been around, you know, maybe 50 years ago or even the last generation of the dictionary, but they are there now. Some of them, though, are terms like binge watch, bokeh, mumblecore, geek out, you know, those are the kinds of things. So we're debating whether it's a good idea to add this many new terms to the dictionary. With our guests for the hour, Lou Highsmith is program director of Lou Creations Production and leader of the Rock Bottom Slam Poetry team. Maya Abtakian is an assistant professor of linguistics at the University of Rochester. Dan Mulcahy is creative director for Bush Communications. And Chris Fanning is the director of communications for Writers and Books. And before we get back into how language changes, we'll grab a couple more of your phone calls. Parrish in East Rochester, next on the phone. Go ahead, Parrish.
Hello. I guess I'm going to play the role of a cat lady here. But I don't have power, so I don't have access to the Internet. Mm. Just wanted to mention that the Merriam-Webster website is very useful, as is a print copy of the Merriam-Webster dictionary, for telling you how to pronounce words. Mm. They actually have on the website for many of their words, there's a little speaker icon that you can click on, and it will play a little short clip of somebody saying that word. And I was wondering if any of your panelists know how they determine which is the correct pronunciation of, in the cases where there are several pronunciations. Mm. For example, is it data or is it data? And Merriam-Webster can determine the meaning and other things about words looking at the printed record, which is the way the OED also looks at things, or, you know, manuscripts, anything written. But when it's something that people are always using, like pronunciation that doesn't have any record, how does Merriam-Webster or Oxford, for that matter, decide what the correct pronunciation should be?
Wow. Maya, everyone's looking at you as the professor of linguistics.
Yeah.
Great question. Thank
question.
You, Parrish.
It's a very good question. I mean, it gets back to one question I think keeps coming up, which is who should be the authority on language, right? So Ingrid's question about if it's used in science, then it should be included, doesn't fall into the same category as the other words. I think in linguistics, largely we would say, well, certainly as a sociolinguist, that I don't want to put one person as being the authority on language. We're all speakers of language. Why should we say that young people are not authorities on language? Why should we say that people in certain professions are not authorities on language?
Sure, and along those lines, isn't it also, or maybe it isn't, but I would assume it is, isn't it also true that for too long, you know, the authorities on language have been pretty white, you know, that we have an exclusionary way of looking at language and what's correct versus not correct. And I think that is evolving. What do you think?
Yes. I mean, I hope it's evolving. And I think I also like the fact that Merriam-Webster has pronunciation guides. I mean, I like that it's an interactive dictionary, that you can click on it, that you can hear it. But I do think that one of the potential problems is this idea that, well, if that's the pronunciation that's there, that must be the one that's correct. I mean, it does. It's like you said, Evan. I mean, that then can lead to biases against people who don't pronounce it that way, right? They're doing it wrong, even if that's how they grew up saying it. That's the dialect they speak. That's what they use. Right?
I suspect somebody's going to call and complain. And I understand, you know, you grew up taught a certain way that is quote unquote correct. But I do think it's fair for us to look into how we define that and how we may exclude with that. So
exactly.
Okay. Great question there, Parrish. And I wish I had even more detail on that. In a moment, though, I am going to talk a little bit about how even pronunciations have changed over the years, over centuries. Some fascinating research that producer Megan Mack pulled in for the program that, you know, again, I could sort of geek out, to use a new word in the dictionary, all day on this. But let me grab one more phone call. It's Wendy in Rochester. Go ahead, Wendy.
Hi. Yeah, I just want to urge my literary friends on the show to make sure everybody knows we need all those words in the dictionary forever, because literature is being written now and using those, even magazine articles. I read stuff from the 20s, 30s, and 40s, and if I couldn't look up what sansan was or know that daddy-o doesn't mean your father, I'd kind of be lost. So for literary reasons, they all have to be there.
Great point.
Okay.
Yeah,
excellent.
Thanks for the phone call. Anything you guys want to add to that, Dan? It sounds like I'm you're co-signing there. Yeah.
Well, I'm just curious as to how they determine at some point, maybe Maya knows, but how do they determine a word like Fitzbo has had sufficient circulation to be entered? How do they measure that?
This is sort of the job of lexicographers, is deciding at what point are they going to say it's been used long enough. I don't think time is always the criteria. Obviously not, right? Because we're seeing words. Some of these words have been around for 30 years and not been in the dictionary, and some of them came into great use, a year ago, right?
Herd mentality, something like that, has been.
Yeah.
Well, and it must be so much easier now to track with online social media.
That's a really interesting question too, right? Is at what stage do we notice that something is new, right?
Right.
So we can talk about on Fleek, for example, right? And it seems to be able to be, well, it's been, maybe can be traced to one individual talking about her eyebrows in a vine that she posted, right?
Is that how it started?
Well, that's maybe what some people think, right? But, and she said that's the first time she used it, but maybe she heard it somewhere else. I mean, we don't know. Yes, it is more possible to trace more things that are going on in language. At the same time, there's a lot of language that's still offline, right?
True.
And it is an interesting question. At what point does something come into really, when does it come into the language?
Usually
we don't notice until much later.
Usually think that by the time I notice something, it is out of use and out of style,
exactly.
Especially among young people. Like on Fleek, Haterade. Like if I started using Haterade, all the younger people around me would be like, yeah, that's awesome. Cool. Great. But to answer, to give a little bit more background on how the two dictionaries do decide on how words get added, let me just read from both here. For Oxford, a 5-person squad of word researchers, lexicographers, and language experts spend their days analyzing databases and tracking collections of words called corpuses to see what new words become frequently used. While the group also judges reader submissions for inclusion, most of their time is spent studying massive electronic text databases for words that pop up more and more in common usage. They come together 4 times a year to discuss it. Whereas for Merriam-Webster, each day, most Merriam-Webster editors devote an hour or two to reading a cross-section of published material, including books, newspapers, magazines, and electronic publications. And they say in our office, this activity is called reading and marking. The editors scour the text in search of new words, new usages of existing words, variant spellings, and inflected forms. In short, anything that might help in deciding if a word belongs in the dictionary, understanding what it means, and determining typical usage. Any word of interest is marked, along with the surrounding context that offers insight into the form and use, and then the marked passages are then input into a computer system and stored both in machine-readable form and on 3x5 slips of paper to create citations. Dictionary editors review groups of citations and use evidence in them to decide if the entries need to be adjusted or added, and before new words can be added, it must have enough citations to show that they are widely used.
Okay.
So that's how they do it. That's how you might end up seeing hangry in a dictionary, because a lot of parents want hangry in there, which is, I can relate, because my son is often pretty hangry. Kathy in Fairport next on the phone. Go ahead, Kathy.
Hi, Evan. I love your show.
Oh, thanks
for taking my call.
Sure.
I really saw two different threads of the words that you were describing, some of which you could argue don't belong in the dictionary, others that do, and the ones that maybe don't. It seems like every generation of young people wants to invent their own language and some words that adults don't understand. So as soon as they go in the dictionary, they're not cool anymore. And those are the ones that I think you could debate, do they belong in the dictionary? How long do they need to be around before they go in the dictionary and all of that? And then the other category, if you will, is the words like EpiPen. They have a precise definition. Everybody knows what they are, and we can agree that's a new thing. It needs to go in the dictionary because it's probably not going to fall out of fashion anytime soon. So I think the whole thing about, gee, do these words belong in the dictionary or not, if you look at the ones that developed as slang, that's a good debate, I think. The other ones, I don't think there's any debate they belong. But, at what point does slang become not slang, I guess, is my question.
It's a great question, and it certainly is a distinction among new entries, but Maya has been saying it sort of doesn't matter, that if it's used regularly, even for a short amount of time, you think it merits a spot.
I do. Yep.
Okay. Somebody's got to disagree with that besides me.
I completely agree with Maya.
I did not think I was going to be on an island with that. Come on, Dan, get on my side.
Well, yeah, my point would be some words, I like to look at words and how they sound and how they look, how they're spelled, the whole aestheticism of a word, and I don't think that gets judged at all. Some of these words are really ugly, you know? They're not attractive to me, you know? So that doesn't mean they shouldn't be in there, but I don't like them.
Beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Really, I guess.
And Dwayne emails the program with a little background for one of my dad's list of terms, to rack or hit the rack. He says, rack is an old Navy term for bed. Got to hit the rack. The Navy had different names for almost everything. A bulkhead for the wall, deck, port, starboard, overhead for the ceiling, ladder for the stairs, and of course, the head. Regards from Dwayne. Thank you, Dwayne. And just a good example. I mean, Maya, that's a good example of how sometimes kids, adolescents can help change language or how we pronounce. Sometimes military backgrounds bring us new words. There's all different genres, and I'm fascinated to try to look for the roots here. What do you think?
Well, I think any social group can innovate a language change, right? And usually that's where it starts, is as some kind of in-group term. I mean, you can probably think of terms from your own high school that you used in your social group in high school or in your jobs. And some of those just get some currency. And because probably of certain people that are sort of brokers of language change, maybe the same type of people who are the people who wear new fashions, right? They seem mm-hmm. kind of cool. It seems like a cool word to use. Mm-hmm. And it spreads outside of that in-group.
Yeah, that's the basis of all these words. This is right. A viral aspect to it. You know, the really, I think it would be fun just to start making words and tracking them, just like people do on the dollar bill. You know how they write down notes sometimes mm-hmm. and see if that dollar bill ever comes back to you? I think that's kind of a fun thing to do. Just make up a word and send it out and see if it catches.
I've never written anything on a dollar bill besides, like, on if I ever get, like, a $100 bill, I just write, like, return to Evan Dawson.
Yeah.
It never works out. But I'm writing words on bills?
Why not? Yeah. Why not? That'd be one way to distribute them. Online is obviously the preferred method. But, you know, picking up words like we were talking about in the lobby, Stephen Colbert kind of coined truthy, which was excellent. It's a lovely word, truthy. It's beautiful to hear and say, and it just so encapsulates fake news and all these kind of unsubstantive ideas that people can't back up.
George W. Bush accidentally coined strategery. No, I think Will Ferrell did, as George W. Bush, to
exactly.
be fair. But that gained a little currency
that's
with meaning as well.
That's a great word, yeah.
Truthiness is what Stephen Colbert coined. Yes,
truthiness.
Truthiness, yes. I think it's interesting you say that, because that was 10 years ago, and yet we still know exactly what that means right now.
It's very appropriate right now.
I want to get John and Henrietta on the phone. I think he's got a very important point to make in this discussion. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, hi, Evan. It's great to talk to you. I listen to your show a lot, and it's the first time I've called in.
Oh, I get all these planted callers today. It's great. I'm just kidding, John. That's okay. Very nice. Thank you.
Yes. Okay, so here's my my point. It seems like the dictionaries deal primarily with words that are written down, and spoken language is pretty much off the map. And I'm thinking particularly of African-American expressions, and particularly one word which I heard many times when I lived in the city called finna. Anybody know what that refers to?
No. Was it finna? Sinna?
Finna. Like fixing to.
Finna.
Finna.
I thought you said sinna. I finna go to the store.
Yeah, that's definitely something that I heard in my household. My parents were from Georgia. And
okay.
As Maya mentioned, it's a derivation of fixing to. And they just shortened it and said finna. But I have cousins down south who still say it. I primarily don't, but if somebody said it, I would know exactly what it meant.
And Lou, before I go back to, hold on there 1 second. For our probably, anybody who would probably feel this way, and I don't mean to cast aspersions, I'm just observing, we may have white listeners who think, well, that's just incorrect language. Don't use that. To you, does finna sound incorrect?
No, it's just something.
It's language, right?
Right, absolutely.
Okay, right,
I know what they're saying. It makes sense.
Absolutely. Right. And I think that, again, goes back to the question on who are the people in power who are controlling what is quote-unquote correct and incorrect language. But go ahead, John. Continue.
Okay. Thank you.
John, you still there? Oh, well, he made his point. It's a good one. But Lou, do you want to add to that? I mean, I think the question on spoken word and, you know, meanings in different communities, yeah, I think it can be exclusionary. And how much more do you think we could see language, even dictionary language, change if that mentality changes?
I feel like it has already started. Mm-hmm. There could probably be more of it. A lot of the words I feel derive from the African-American community anyway. Things like yes, you know, that there are things that we may use that spreads to the broader, I guess you could say, community, and everybody tends to use it. So to me, it's not a matter of someone, or let's say, as you said, a white person at a university saying, okay, this is now acceptable for other people to say, whether you deem it acceptable or not, it's being used. Mm-hmm. And people understand it, and we can articulate in our own way, and people know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So to me, it doesn't matter if it's legitimized by a certain person. It's just we legitimize it by using it.
Okay. Maya, you agree?
100%. And not only that, I think one of the things that sometimes happens when you put someone in a position of language, of being a language authority, naming what's correct, there's this tendency to think that other varieties aren't systematic, that you can just say, you know, finna anywhere, for example. You can just say be anywhere. And of course, that's not true. There's a right way of saying it and a wrong way of saying it within that, you know, within that dialect, right, or within that context. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let me just also touch on some of the other background that we pulled together that just, I love stuff like this. This is also from the Economist article that Kyle Semmel sent from Writers and Books. Thank you, Kyle. First of all, this just was cool to me. Quote, some words hang on in a sort of life support state, frozen in a single usage but otherwise forgotten. Who uses the verb to wend except in the fixed expression to wend one's way somewhere? Which I barely even hear that anymore. But the Economist gives us a bonus fact. The past tense of wend replaced the old past tense of to go, which is why we say I went. I did not know that went is past tense of wend. So that's kind of a cool look at that. We don't say wend anymore, but we do say went every day. And then they write this about words that, you know, might die off. Quote, dedicated researchers have managed to capture some lost words and phrases. For the Dictionary of American Regional English, researchers conducted thousands of interviews, usually with older country folks who still spoke their regional dialect. They found such treasures as to pungle up, meaning for someone to produce money or something else owed, and the mulligrubs, indigestion and by extension, a foul mood. So that's not hangry. Hangry's a foul mood because you're hungry. If you're a mulligrub, you have indigestion and you're in a foul mood. I love that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to start using mulligrub in an effort. I'm going to start writing it on bills. In an effort to bring it back. Would you have known mulligrub, Dan? By the way,
I would not have known mulligrub. You know, but I think there's language and just like clothing. You know, you put on a suit to make a presentation. Perhaps if you're talking with clients, you use a certain level of the dictionary, your lexicon there. And I think if you're talking with friends, you're more apt to put in, say, a sausage party. Use that. And when you're talking formally, probably.
Well, and here's another example of how things change. Megan's research tells us many changes begin with teens and young adults. Mm-hmm. And an example is a small winged creature with feathers used to be known as a brid, a B-R-I-D. Ugh. Over time, the pronunciation changed to bird. Although it's not hard to imagine children in the 1400s being scolded for slurring brid, B-R-I-D, into bird, it's clear that eventually they just accepted it. Fine, it's a bird. We'll change it. You keep saying bird. Brid is a bird. I mean, I did not know that, by the way. And, you know, I wonder if eventually we're going to do that with a word like hopefully. You know, hopefully, as an adverb, we use that incorrectly, it seems like 98% of the time. But then, Maya, does that just change the meaning? Or is that one example where we should say, look,
it's funny that you say, is that going to happen? I would say that's already happened with
But if you go to the dictionary, like, no, don't accept this. Is it important that we trace the evolutionary path of language? Does it matter that we do that?
Yes. I mean, I think it tells us a lot about a lot of things. Human behavior, who talks to who, because, of course, that's how language change spreads. What types of things are possible? So there are things that are common processes, right? So I think the fact that Dan likes I forget which word you liked. Haterade.
Haterade.
Right? Part of it's because it's so transparent what it means, right? So some of the words we don't like so much, it's because you can't quite figure out what it means. These ones that are blends, you know, Brangelina, Bennifer, Kimye, right? We know right away who those couples are talking about, right. What that word is referring to, because it's a blend of some, you know, humble brag is another example. I think looking at language change tells us something about what these processes are, both, you know, sort of tells us something about our brains and something about our behavior.
All right. Well, I want to get back to your phone calls. Pete in Canandaigua has been waiting. Go ahead, Pete.
Yeah. Hey, good afternoon. I want to say thanks for this discussion. It's really been fun to listen to. I grew up in Canandaigua, so I speak like a Rochesterian primarily. But I also spent 20 years in the military, so I appreciate your discussion earlier about how different subcultures develop their own language. But one of the best parts about being in the military was meeting people from all over the country that spoke different dialects of the English language, as everyone's discussing today. And, you know, it's just, it's a blessing to be able to meet people that just speak differently, think differently, you know, sound differently. It can be fun. It can be frustrating at times. It's just, you know, just a wonderful experience. Now I teach communications at one of the colleges here in the Rochester area. And one of the things that I tell my students is about developing their own voice. And part of that is how they use language.
Did I lose you, Pete? Oh, there you are. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Pete. We lost you for 1 second, but go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just saying how, you know, one of the things I teach, you know, my students in my communications courses is, you know, about developing their own voice and using language, you know, to get a message across. And how you talk to one audience may be different than how you talk to another audience, but you can be authentic regardless of the audience that you're talking to and the type of language that you're doing. And again, this discussion has just been great. I've had a great time listening to it.
Pete, thank you very much. That comment reminds me of a comment I heard the other day from our friend Tiana Magnon, who is the editor-in-chief of Open Mic Rochester. That's a local black news publication. And she just made a comment on social media that, you know, it's nice occasionally to have meetings with fellow African-Americans and not have to code switch. Well, white people rarely have that problem or that challenge. And I think about what Pete is saying, and I just feel like, again, it goes back to a societal expectation of correct or not, as opposed to respecting differences. You know, Lou, can you share some thoughts on that?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I know Tiana very well, so.
She's awesome, by the way. And Tiana's
amazing.
The first person I heard, and it was on the show, to use, yes.
Oh, really?
She says it all the time. It's awesome, but go ahead.
I agree wholeheartedly with that. It's almost like being bilingual. You have to be able to, I can say the same thing, but it's true and honest what I'm saying, but I may say it in a different way depending on who I'm speaking with. So really for me, when Tiana mentions code switching, I may be in a, you know, say a family gathering. I may speak about the president, but I will articulate it in a different way to them. So it's not, you know, it's easier for them to understand what I'm saying. Whereas I may be in a meeting with the executive director of Writers and Books,
man,
and I may not,
Kyle,
you know, I may not mention it the same way to Kyle. I'll still have the same opinion about what I'm expressing, but I will express it in a different way.
And I recall moments in which President Obama was criticized often from the right for, well, he was addressing, you know, a historically black college, and he seemed to be, you know, speaking a little bit more in that dialect, and is that authentic? Why did he do that? And I'm going, why do we care?
You know, to me, one is not more legitimate than the other.
Right.
I just want to communicate what I'm saying effectively to whoever I'm speaking with. So one is not better or worse than the other.
Okay. And Maya, have we gone off course here, or is this all tied to language and what words we kind of sort of accept and use?
Yeah, I mean, very much. And this issue of code switching and politicians is an interesting one, I think, because politicians get a lot of flack for it. But of course, we all do that when we're talking to a certain audience to some extent, we change how we're speaking. Definitely. What happens with politicians is they're being recorded or they're on TV, mm-hmm. and there's this other audience sort of eavesdropping on what they're doing, right? Mm-hmm. And that's when they get criticized.
All right, well, we're down to our last 90 seconds here. I just want to read an email from a listener. I know we could have done this all day. I've loved this. Carrie writes to us and says, I read a fascinating book a while back called The Professor and the Madman, a tale of murder, insanity, and the making of the Oxford English Dictionary. It details how the OED, the dictionary, started and the story of a man, Dr. W.C. Minor, who had submitted more than 10,000 entries to the dictionary. When the committee insisted on honoring them, a shocking truth came to light. Dr. Minor, an American Civil War veteran, was also an inmate in an asylum for the criminally insane. She said, fun book. And she says, also at age 46, I feel really old because I only missed one of your dad's words. No, see, some words from the 1950s and 60s live on. My dad was surprised to hear that people still say calling dibs. I said, Dad, I think I used that yesterday. He said, I haven't heard that since the 1960s. If you're listening now, Dad, everybody at this table's probably used dibs. Yes. Or
well, when you say, I'll take shotgun or riding shotgun, that's from Wells Fargo back in... Right? Isn't that from sitting on a
stagecoach?
Stagecoach. Thank you.
So, and that's an example, Dan, of a term. You know. That,
yeah, stagecoach.
Very good.
Wow, you're really
that
old.
That was good.
Coming back.
How old are you? So you've been reincarnated.
But Dan, that is an example of maybe a vote in favor of certain terms because that's one that's lasted. There's plenty that last.
Yes. Yeah, you bet.
You know, my dad said, "How about have a cow?" I said, "Well, people don't use it as much, but they know what it means." Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of a thing.
Yeah, but there's the equivalent around for sure. Have a cow. You know, and doesn't don't the Simpsons use have a cow?
Oh well,
don't
yes,
have a cow.
They do, and the Simpsons are still on the air, so that's still acceptable.
That's still current.
Yeah, but they've been on the air for like two centuries, so you know.
That's
so
true.
We really could have just kept going and doing this all day, and such great feedback. I hope you did well on the quiz if you took it online with us. Chris Fanning aced it, so you win nothing because he was unbeatable. Thank goodness, because we had no prizes to give you. But I just want to thank our guests here. Chris Fanning from Writers and Books, always good. Thank you.
Happy to be here.
Dan Mulcahy, great fun. Thank you, Dan.
You bet.
Our thanks to Lou Highsmith. Lou, thank you.
Thank you.
And Maya Abtakian, great learning from you. Great fun discussion. Thank you for being here.
Thanks.
John Andrus is the technical director of this program. See, look, we're changing the language of John's title. I just promoted you. How do you feel about that? There you go. I have nothing else in terms of prizes or raises, though, John. See? And Megan Mack is the producer. I'm merely the host. I hope you had a great week, and we'll talk to you Monday on Member Supported Public Radio.